I'm going to call this meeting to order. It's right at 6 o'clock on the dot. I think our first order of business is to the Pledge of Allegiance, so.
Join me.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next is, it looks like everybody's accounted for, so we have all 8 members here. That's terrific. Next item then is the adoption of the minutes from our last meeting, which was way back when, July 16th, it seems like a long time ago. Hopefully you had a chance to look at them. Does anybody have any corrections or changes to the minutes?
Motion.
Yes. You're making a motion to accept?
Yep. I'm second.
Okay, so it's Keith makes motion. Jenny seconds it. Any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of accepting the minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, so that's 7-0. And I don't know how we treat Casey in terms of the record, since he's not a voting member of the board. Do we need to show that as anything, or is it just 7-0 is fine?
Just 7-0 is
fine. Okay, just.
Apologies, Chair Bailey. Uh-oh. Did you skip number 2, the announcements?
Well, that was for if we were going to reorder it.
Okay, there's no need to do that.
I'll mention it.
Okay.
The assistant chief has informed me that the chief may be a little late, and so if we need to, we will push back the taser presentation, take up some of our other items, and hopefully by then the chief will be able to join us.
Okay.
So let's get to the chief's report. Did you want?
Yeah, she'll be doing the chief's report, but I think we can proceed with the taser presentation if you'd like.
Oh, I can proceed with that, okay.
Okay.
So it's just her part of the report. Got it.
Correct, yes.
So that's deferred. Okay. In that case, Jeff, if you're there, do you have anything to report for the independent police auditor?
Yeah, good evening, everyone. How are you?
Can't hear you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can't hear me?
We can't now.
Now
can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Just a couple of things. We have continued our regular reviews, and Denise will report on those in a moment, both for July and August, since there was no August meeting. Number 2, we have begun our audit process of the automated license plate reader system that SLPD is using, the FLOX system, and I believe we should be able to report on that in our next meeting. And lastly, we have developed a curriculum which was developed specifically for our new youth member, but one that we are offering up to everyone as refresher training as well. And I'll just explain how we develop this and what is included. Were helped tremendously.
Jeff, I'm going to ask you to hold off. We
sure.
Actually have it as a separate agenda item. It's going over the training.
Oh, okay.
And so
no,
then you
I'll
can.
Hold up. I'll yeah. hold off on that. Yep.
Very good.
Okay.
I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
So
for something else?
That's it. Now, if Denise can present the stats.
Okay.
Yeah. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do we have volume? Yeah. Okay, good. As you should have the chart in front of you, and as Jeff had just explained, because we didn't have an August meeting, we just went ahead and filled out both months
right.
for this month. And just looking at uses of force, Should I wait a second here?
People are just trying to pull up.
Okay, continuing. Just, yeah, just, in, okay, I'll hold up. I was going to say, interrupt me if I'm going too fast.
Go ahead.
Tell me when you're ready.
Yeah.
Okay. So in July, if you remember, the incidents pending from prior review means kind of that backlog that's in the San Leandro PD's hands and until they push them to us, to that first column. In July, there were 28 uses of force that were waiting for review, and in August, there were 33. I'm going to just do the months together. I'm not going to do them separate. New uses of force, there were 7 in July and 8 in August. The number that were reviewed by the department, there were 11 reviewed by them and 5 in August. So 11 in July, 5 in August, and we reviewed all of those, which is the next column. There were no ACAs, or those agreed upon course of action, out of those reviews of use of force. With regard to pursuits, as you can see, there is quite a backlog. We've talked about that in months prior, and we're whittling away at that. Again, had to do with an operating system problem, that they weren't being forwarded properly, just as a reminder, but they are now getting forwarded to us, and we're both working to get that backlog down. So the incidents pending review of pursuits was 29 in July and 47 in August. So they've had more, an increase. And this, again, has to do with that system where they weren't being pushed to us, but now they are. New pursuits, there were 6 in July, 8 in August. Reviewed by the department, 18 and 18, and we reviewed all of those. So we're keeping up with them as soon as they can get them to us. We get them reviewed. We did have some ACAs, which I will summarize in just a minute. In fact, all of our ACAs, the agreed upon course of actions, had to do with pursuits. There were none for force and none for the complaints. So just moving on the stats, that last set, incidents from prior period, there were 12 complaints from prior period. There was only 6 in July, and I say only, I was looking at August. There's only 1 new complaint in August, but there were 6 new complaints in July. Of those that were reviewed by the department, there were none completed and pushed to us by the department in July. 2 of them were pushed to us in August. We reviewed both of the 2 that were sent to us. And again, there were no ACAs related to complaints.
What happened?
Equipment on uniform. The BWC is the body worn camera, and we had one incident where we couldn't see the video because it was blocked by the officer's equipment, which has been resolved. There were 4 incidents. So there, in the parens, you can see there is a number 4 in parens. That means that's how many times it occurred. Where we saw that there were the number of units involved in the pursuit were a problem. We also saw some reporting protocols or where we thought the report should be clarified for ease of reading it. Doesn't mean it was an error as much as it was just this should be clarified within the report. 4 times that happened. Late activation of emergency equipment, 2 that happened. And excessive speeds or tactical issues, 2 we saw that happening. So that's what we found to come up with agreed upon course of action. The course of action, of course, typically revolves around some kind of remediation, counseling, training, discipline if necessary. And I will pause there for any questions.
Okay.
It's a lot of information.
Yes, on pursuits, when you say it's taking time for the department to get them to you, is it a system or is it the department?
It's a system. In this case, it was a system problem. Like the use of force that didn't occur, and it's the same system, literally the electronic system they use. There's certain buttons that you have to push to make sure it goes to the right place. The supervisor wasn't pushing that button. So it was a human error of the system. It wasn't intentional. It was just what was occurring, and we discovered it and went, oh no, they fixed it. It's all working fine now. We're getting the newer cases. But there was quite a bit of backlog cases that weren't getting pushed properly to us. So now we're working through all of those. Does that make sense to answer your question?
Yeah, I was just trying to clarify. I guess it would make sense if, say, Keith was doing it and I had 20 of them and I didn't know how to do it and I never got it to you versus the entire management department or just not knowing how to use the system or not following through.
Right. It was literally, I think, two different supervisors. It happened. I might need clarification, but I know at least one wasn't pushing that through, wasn't using the system properly,
yeah,
not intentionally, of course, but it was,
It was one supervisor, and once it was discovered, it was the catch-up piece of it, and that's what's slowly trickling in.
Okay.
I think we should note that we decided fairly early on that we would leave the backlogged ones to take a lesser position in our reviews. We would review the newer ones as they came in and then do the older ones seriatim as best we could. So that's the way we're proceeding.
Yeah, and that's intentional so that, because some of the older ones, they're 6 or 8 months old, taking action on an incident that occurred that long ago is not as effective, obviously, as something that just occurred. We want to be able to make sure we're looking at stuff that's just occurring, take action, remediate that, and then we can go back and see any patterns or necessary changes on the older ones, but they're not as critical at this point.
Okay, can I ask you to repeat the, I think there were three types of concerns that you had from the pursuits. One was excessive speed. What were the other factors you were looking at?
Sure, they're on the bottom of your report, so you can follow along with me. It was a body-worn camera issue, the number of units in the pursuit issue, reporting protocols, that's another issue. Late activation of emergency equipment, that's another one, and excessive speed or tactics, so that's actually five kinds of issues.
Got it.
Right?
Okay. And so you said that the ACAs were essentially for remediation. Were there any policy recommendations related to this at this point?
The policy actually is being discussed as we speak. Yes, I would say, but I'm not quite ready to announce what those are. The chiefs and the department are working on that policy now. It's going to come to us, and it'll eventually come to the board.
Got it. Thank you. Anybody else have any questions on the... Is there more? Did I miss... is there anything more that you wish to report at this time? No? Okay.
Tim has a question.
Tim, go ahead.
The ACAs regarding policy change, are they for pursuits?
That's what I understood it to be.
Yes.
Pursuits, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? No? Okay. Thank you then for that report. I think we can move on.
Thank you.
Have a comment on this? No, right? Excuse my scribbling here. So that brings us to the board secretary's report. Eric?
Good evening, members of the board. I appreciate being here with you tonight. Just a very brief update. Just want to thank you all for those who were able to attend at the police department United for Safety event this Saturday. I also want to highlight that we were able to procure additional name tags for those board members who joined on subsequent to the issuance of the last ones. I don't have them with me tonight, but I can certainly get them to you very soon. And then also want to thank Chair Bailey for some relevant updates to the online CPRD website, and also want to acknowledge and thank the work of the outreach committee. We're in active collaboration now, working on the outreach, updated outreach materials.
This is the idea of the card with the QR code. Thank you. Okay, that brings us to public comments for non-agenda items. Do we have any public comment?
Chair, we've received one comment card from Douglas Baldy.
Okay.
Good evening, commissioners. Very nice to see you all. Mr. Franco, it's nice to see you. I've been waiting on you. Ms. Gould, I'm not sure how to say your last name, but it's really nice to have you here. And do you have any friends? I think there's just, isn't there a second youth member?
Yep.
Or it's just one youth?
No.
Just one.
Yeah, but we have an open seat.
Yeah, we have open seat.
Okay, so I just wanted to say a word about what I and some of the San Leandro residents have been up to in the last 6 weeks or so. We've been trying to create awareness around the perhaps inevitability of ICE coming to our fair town. So we have been out on the William Street overpass over Interstate 880 on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. A couple of patrol cars have come by, so maybe let them know that that's fully within our First Amendment rights would be good. They've been very friendly. We've been passing out cards. One card is a yellow card that has the number for the Alameda County Immigration, Legal, and Education Partnership, a CELEP. Central thoughts what it is. And then of course the red card, I think most people are aware of, that tells you what to do if you're stopped by ICE. It's not so far-fetched. Yesterday ICE did not go to Chicago, they went to the suburbs of Chicago, a place I know well, west of Chicago, Elgin. Why go there? Well, that's where the meat packing plants are. I've made that trip many a times when the back of the yards was shut down. I could no longer go get my bovine nasal septum in counties down there, and I had to drive an hour west. They also raided Home Depots and whatnot. So Trump's been threatening a lot about, you know, Oakland, and guess who's a suburb of Oakland? San Leandro. And with our mix of industrial and residential, it seems like, you know, we might be a similar target. So it's just a matter of, you know, making people aware, being prepared. Hopefully it won't happen. But I'm also still waiting. You know, San Leandro is a get out of jail free, what do you call it?
Sanctuary city.
Oh, what?
Sanctuary city.
We're a sanctuary city, yes, but I don't think there's anything in the city council's stuff that says, you know, thou shalt not participate.
Chair, what is our last speaker card?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the comments. The next thing on our agenda is the presentation on the Taser 10 conducted energy device, about its capabilities and training. So I'll turn it over to you folks.
Thank you, Chair. So I'd like to introduce Officer Blake Stanford, who is one of our instructors for the Taser 10. And he's going to cover the Taser 10 itself, but then also our previous Taser model.
Yes, I will.
Perfect. All right.
Thank you, Chief. I'm Officer Stanford. I'm one of our TASER instructors here. I'm going to give you guys a brief overview of the TASER 10 and the differences between the TASER 10 and our former model, the TASER 7. I really like the TASER 10. I think a TASER is naturally not going to be the most reliable thing we use on the street, depending on people's clothing and other situational factors. It doesn't work every single time, but I truly think the Taser 10 is almost as good as it could currently get. until the company acts on, inevitably comes up with something in a couple of years that's even better. But first, just so that you guys have kind of a mindset as to when we use these, we can pull our tasers under two circumstances: if the suspect is violent, physically resisting, or if they've displayed via words or action some sort of intention of being violent with us. Think about if they're threatening to hurt us when we're confronting them, or they're armed with some sort of weapon and refuse to drop it, or something along those lines. The way a taser works, the device deploys probes. Those probes make contact with someone's person. When two different contact points are made, the taser device puts out an output of electricity. Those two probes communicate with each other and essentially cause what's called NMI, neuromuscular incapacitation. That's that uncontrolled tensing of the muscles that you've probably seen on videos. So the biggest difference between the 7 and 10. So like I mentioned, you need two different probes to get that NMI for it to be effective. I brought one of each with me today. So the Taser 7, which I will have a good example for you guys here, has two different probes, as you see. This is what happens when we activate the Taser. There's a little switch right here. When it's off, you activate the Taser, and there are two different probes. So when you deploy this weapon, two probes go out. And how many do you need to hit for it to actually work? Both of them. That's pretty hard, right? That just someone that we're going to use this on is probably moving. It's going to be hard to land both of those probes in safe parts of their body so that it is effective. And think about how close I am to, think about if I were to move back, call it 5-10 more feet, how much farther those probes would be apart from each other, just making it that much harder to land two of them.
Can I ask quickly, what is the range of the 7
what's
versus...
range? He's going to get to that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll give that in a second.
Okay, thanks.
With the Taser 10, it is only one probe, as you will see. So you need to deploy it twice, but then you can personally choose where each of those probes go versus having that set split that the Taser 7 has. So the effective range with the Taser 10 is about 45 feet. We've tested it up to 45 feet, and it is effective that far, just in our training. The Taser 7 was only 22 feet.
22, that's right.
And so think about with the Taser 7, think about how close I am now. And then the farther away you get, the more those spread out. Exactly. So if you're 22 feet away, it's pretty hard to hit someone in the shoulder and then the foot, you know? That's why I think the Taser 10 is a really good option. With the Taser 10, you also, there are 10 cartridges inside. So you can miss 8 times and it can still end up working. Obviously, that's not the goal. We're going to try and use it as efficiently as possible. Whereas the Taser 7, it only has 4 cartridges, so you get 2 chances to land 2 of the 4 total probes that are in there.
So you use the light to aim, the sight and aim, is that what?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Again, so the 7 had just 2 cartridges and the 10 has 10, is that?
Exactly. I'll give the warning mark of each. So each has a very different feature as far as what we can use as a warning. The Taser 7, you can do what's called arcing the electrical output, which looks like this. That's the sound it makes. It also, if you can see, it shows the little electrical connection there on the end. Axon phased away from that completely, and the Taser 10 now has what's just called the warning alert, which what it does is it gives an audible electronic beeping tone and it has this bright light. They say 1,000 lumens. I'm not sure the significance of 1,000 lumens, but it sounds like a lot of lumens. And as you'll see as demonstrated here, that's what the warning alert does. Depending on the situation, I'd say it's a little less effective than the ARC, but it still works. I've seen it work on multiple people. It's gotten them to stop whatever they were doing that had us with that thing out in the first place. It's been good. The biggest thing about the taser time is going to be that distance, though. Like we talked about, 45 feet. One of the textbook situations that I think of when we start talking about the 45 feet is we do a lot of high-risk stops on vehicles that are wanted for whatever reason. High-risk stops, a huge part of de-escalation is staying behind cover, because the second you leave cover to try and use the Taser 7, because you need to get closer naturally, is the second that you're more at risk to the suspect's actions. They're more of a danger to you when you're away from cover. So the Taser 10 allows us to stay behind cover while we are deploying it, staying behind the minimal safety, but safety of our patrol vehicle doors while deploying it. I've used it during one specific situation where we stopped a shooting suspect, and he was acting erratically outside of the car, making gestures, starting to go back to the car where the firearm was, and we were able to successfully get him in custody because of the Taser 10's capabilities. That never would have been possible with the Taser 7, and based on his behavior, I think there was a pretty good probability that we were going to end up having to use deadly force against that guy if we weren't able to intervene before he made it back to the car to grab the weapon that he was going for. Let's see what else. I made the index card with some key points, like his high school speech he did. Target areas. With the Taser 10, it's going to be the same as the 7. Generally, where we are going to aim for is the lower center mass, so the stomach, lower back, and the legs. Typically, the thighs. Places we want to avoid are chest, head, and neck. All those are pretty self-explanatory of why we want to avoid them.
Excuse me, can I, having looked at the policy 304, there's also reference to not firing at the groin.
Yes.
Is that true still?
Yes, absolutely, yes. And then at-risk populations, we want to avoid as much as possible using the conducted energy device on elderly, juveniles, people with low body mass, pregnant individuals, and then people who have positional dangers, like people who are on elevated surfaces and stuff like that, because the taser by nature creates that NMI and unable to control themselves, so they could potentially fall, stuff like that. And then an important part of the Taser 10, though, is that because you only get that one probe, our goal when we're deploying it is you deploy it twice and then reassess. Is the device working? Was it effective? Did you achieve NMI? Did you not achieve NMI? Did it not work? But the suspect's cooperative now, so I don't need to deploy it again, and so forth. The Taser 10, there are multiple ways that you can tell if it was successful. It shows you there's a little screen on the back, but when you're in the middle of an incident where you probably need to use this, you're probably not going to be looking at that screen. So it makes a audible tone when it is successful. When you get two hits, the taser can read when you have two successful cartridge deployments, and then it makes that audible tone. And then obviously just the visual stimulus, what am I looking at? Was this person affected by it? Are they still coming at me? Are they still doing what they were doing that caused us to use it in the first place? And then, let's see. All activity is documented with the taser after every use. when we dock our batteries, everything is downloaded onto Axon's website, so they'll be able to see that I just did the warning alert right there. But I've got what this is. So.
Can you walk through what kinds of information is captured in that log?
Is everything you do. So every single warning alert, every single time you deploy it, I've never looked at it on the other end myself, but from my understanding, it shows time of deployment, time of warning alert, and so forth.
Okay. So basically from the point that it's activated, it's recording each action taken.
From my understanding, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And I believe that is all I have on my end.
Keith, question?
Yeah, can we volunteer one of the police officers so we can see it in action?
We're going to ask you the same thing.
I'm going to move myself out of it because I have a hair on my head. So I would volunteer, but I think that's a process that you can't hit. So I'm keeping my opportunities.
It's not going to help your golf game. I went on the Axon site, and one of the things they say in there as the company, because they're worried about their own liability, is that it's not a requirement in the training to use it on a live person. They backed away from what we've seen in the past as these fun videos with people quivering on the floor. So just so you know, Exxon doesn't recommend it.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
We're at in the policy it's written where you can only do it two times, the policy then?
So there's no policy that you can only do it two times. The goal is just always going to be to deploy it twice and then reassess to see whether or not it was effective or not, so that if we're not just boom, 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 boom. It's deploy twice, reassess. That's how we're all trained. Everyone had to go through an 8-hour training on this device and show proficiency with it and pass tests, and that's how everybody that went through that training was trained.
I'm sorry, everybody had the same training?
Yes.
Yeah. I asked this question before, but is there a certain spot where each officer is designated to place their taser on the body?
Yeah, it just can't be on the gun side.
So then, which side is that? So that'd be that you're either...
Yeah, so it's got to be on the side opposite of the firearm.
Okay.
To avoid obvious grabbing of the wrong weapon.
And also, it's kind of obvious, I know when you did your taser, it's yellow. I mean, it's kind of like, your weapon is like black, so I would say that's another...
Yeah. Noticeable difference?
Yeah. Joseph, did you have more?
How much did they cost a piece, and how many did the police department order or purchase?
I don't have that information readily available to you.
The website says it costs around $6,000. I'm sure you got a discount.
Hopefully.
So we, I can pull it up here, but it was we went to council for it because it was a large state item. So they don't sell the tasers individually. It comes to the package. So for our agency, it includes the taser, the body cameras, the cloud system, all that stuff. So it's not individual tasers. It's packaged as a whole.
So
are you guys phasing out the 7, or are you guys still using it?
So I believe all of our officers, sergeants, and above are onto the 10. The only people still using the 7 are our PSTs who carry them in case they come across dogs.
Dogs, okay, thank you.
Because they are also our animal control unit, so yeah. Naturally they come across feral animals every once in a while.
I've got a question. Hi. My palms aren't sweaty anymore. That was really like close. It's like, oh no. But it's fine. My question is about the trainings. I don't know if you can tell us what's included in the training, and how, like, things like making sure that it's not
targeted at the head or groin or any of those areas? Like, how is that ensured with the training? And also, is the training, does the training incorporate community-specific scenarios that might come up for this community?
That's a great question. Our training included first tabletop instruction to all the staff on just different nomenclature and how to handle the device. And then we do drills, which we call dry drills, essentially without a live taser. They have training cartridges so that it doesn't deploy a cartridge, but when you pull the trigger, it does make a noise as if you deployed it. Just practice using it. And then we do live deployments. We have a big felt silhouette, which is from Axon. It's a silhouette of a person, and it has the target areas on it so that everything in green is places where you would want to deploy the taser, and then areas in orange or red are areas where you would not want to deploy the taser. So we do, everybody does live deployments on that, and then the coolest part of our training is we recently got a VR system, which I had never used VR, but it was invaluable to have and run everybody through to get reps using it. Put on these silly glasses, and then it looks like a real person running at you or running away from you that you just get to repeatedly practice hitting those correct areas of the body. And there are different scenarios they do put you into with people that are verbally resistant, physically resistant, and stuff like that. And so you can just kind of really get rep after rep after rep without wasting cartridges that cost money. And it's something we can also keep using just beyond the formal training, which we can use at lineup trainings and stuff like that, so that everyone stays updated on their skills and target areas and so forth.
And if I can comment also on the training, because I actually went through the training as well so that I could speak intelligently about it. In addition to what Officer Stanford already mentioned, there is also a testing component of it. And so if an officer is not proficient in the use of the taser, then they are not authorized to carry it. So you do have to pass a litany of tests in order to be signed off to carry the taser.
Thank you.
Yep, and during that test, you might get a good deployment, but you might hit a target area that you don't want to hit, and then you get docked points for that, too.
Does the PSTs go through that training, too?
The PSTs did not go through the Taser 10 training because they cannot carry it, but they do go through Taser training as well.
Okay. Because he just mentioned that they can't use them.
So. Yes, and they're not allowed to carry the taser unless they've been through the training.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank
they
you.
Do go through the training.
Okay, thank you.
Training.
Related question, the testing, is that Axon's product, or is it or what is required by post, or are they the same thing?
That is a good question. I believe it is an Axon test. Because it's their VR devices that we use to run the test.
I have one more.
Go ahead, sorry.
One more just training follow-up. So that's it's an outside organization's training?
Yes, it's the company.
Manufacturer.
Are there any elements of like implicit bias training that it's involved in the overall training?
I would have to
added
go look.
In addition to?
I would have to go look through each individual scenario that they have. They have scores of different scenarios that you can do in different training, so I need to go back on the VR and look at every single training that's available.
I think it was more in relation to VR, now that we know that that's what's being used.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was my question. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Do you have more?
I don't have anything else, unless you guys have any other questions.
I do.
Go ahead, Tim, go ahead.
So, 45-foot range, if a guy's charging you, that's not very far at all. Do you use this? I just would like to know, generally, your experience with different situations. Do you use it, for instance, if somebody's trying to go away from you, can you shoot him in the lower back? I know that you said that's okay for a target area, but does it matter that he's retreating, or does he have to be confronting you and moving towards you, and also address how effective the 40, does the effective range, it seems like it would change depending on what clothing, if that guy's wearing a winter coat, for example.
Yes, clothing is a very important aspect. The device will not be effective if it does not make contact with the skin. So clothing is a huge part of it. If someone is, the incident I was talking to you guys about before, that guy was wearing a thin hoodie, and it worked. We've had plenty of instances where people are wearing jackets and it does not work. It kind of all depends on the specific clothing. To answer your first question, it kind of all goes back to what I talked about at the beginning. Can we articulate whether someone is violent or and physically resisting us, or if they have displayed via words or actions some sort of intent to be violent with us? Every situation is different. The use of the taser is not limited to just when somebody is coming at us. It can be used when someone is running away from us, depending on the circumstances. Think about showing up to a call like a domestic violence. Say, suspect is over here, victim is over here, and then he starts charging at the victim again in an attempt to harm her further. I would say that person is violent, and he has displayed an intent to be violent with someone else, so the use of it could potentially result in it striking him in the back. And he's not coming at us, but he's a potential danger to someone else as well. We don't just use it to protect us. We can use it to protect other people as well.
Do you have a lot of experience with the older model?
Probably count on one hand the amount of times I personally deployed it. It, because of its natural limitations compared to the 10, we didn't consider it as an option as much, depending on distance, depending on how much somebody was moving, because you only get those two shots. That I would prefer to use something else that's more reliable, but now with the Taser 10, we consider it as an option far more often.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just learning about this, but it doesn't seem like it was much of an option at the 7 model of 22 feet, you said, right?
I mean, it was always an option. Like I said, it kind of always depends on the situation, the distance, how much this person is moving, their clothing. It was an option, and people did use it many times where it was effective and had a result that prevented us from using even higher levels of force.
Can it penetrate a t-shirt?
Yes.
I just thought of something relating to, like, you know, like you guys said, the height in a t-shirt. How about a person's weight? Would that matter? How you, you know, the penetration?
The only thing I can think of as far as weight goes is that our policy discourages us from using it on people that have very low body mass.
But how do you determine, I mean, it's kind of complicated. I mean,
how do you determine that, though? I mean, just looking at a person, how would you determine if they have low body mass versus somebody else who doesn't? I mean,
just someone who is very thin naturally will have less muscle, and the effectiveness of the taser relies on providing that NMI, neuromuscular incapacitation of the muscles. So it will naturally be less effective on somebody with low body mass.
The more fat you have, the more resistance your body has to conductivity. So if somebody with low body mass doesn't have to.
Okay. Thank you. I think I get it.
Actually, make sure I understand. So when I first heard and I read it in the policy that avoid low body mass as one of the kind of vulnerable populations, I guess I assume, and it sounds like I'm assuming wrong, that those folks who are at greater risk of some adverse physical response to the actual shock of the weapon. And you're saying that's not the case? It's just the less muscle, they're therefore less effective in immobilizing the person?
I'm sure they're both a big part of it. Your reasoning may very well be part of their consideration. I'm not the person who pushes forward the Axon recommendations and the policy, but I could imagine that's that's also a big consideration when it comes to low body mass.
Yeah, I mean, I think from our perspective, at least mine, you know, safety is one of the obvious questions when trying to understand how this device is used and what the risks are. Other questions?
I just have one more because I'm just thinking about it. How about if people, okay, I've seen things maybe not on my terms, but you know how people who are like heavily, they take medication for whatever, like depression or something. Can that, or they're more hyped up than usual, I mean, would that affect anything too? Like what?
I don't know. That's
how I can put it. I don't know how to say it.
Not as far as I know or what I've been instructed on.
Okay.
I do know that I've been instructed by people from Axon multiple times, and they have teams of lawyers and scientists that put this thing under rigorous studies, and they would not do, for the liability that's on them, they would not push these devices out if they did not have their ducks in a row and believed it was a danger to people without checking all the boxes.
Okay, thank you.
I guess I have one other question, and it's more about, I mean, it seems fairly obvious to me that on one hand, the extended range does afford a lot more opportunities to de-escalate, to find proper cover, like you mentioned, buy time, all the things we understand to be part of the escalation. I guess my immediate thought then is, do we expect, and are you get, well, it's too early to tell, I guess, but are we expecting then with the longer range, you're going to see a lot more use of the taser?
No, I don't think you can correlate that distance with an increased usage of the taser, because regardless of what the distance is, the officer still has to justify why they're using the taser. That's where everything starts from, right? They have to justify it, and then they have to continually reassess why they are continuing to use it or why they will discontinue using it, depending on the situation.
Okay, I guess we will see over time what, if it actually changes behavior in ways that we didn't anticipate. I get that in every instance, whether it's the 7 or the 10, you still would have to document the rationale. I think it'd be worth taking a look at what, and to be fair, I mean, I think if you're really going to do an analysis over time of what's happened once you start using the Taser 10, you know, you may find, and again, this is hypothetical, that the usage of the Taser goes up, but you also may see a decline in the use of deadly force, right? I mean, those could be, in an ideal world, that's what you'd want as a result, right? Is that the Taser is avoiding the use of more lethal means. So I was just throwing that out there as something to kind of pay attention to over time and try to understand the impacts of this new device from my perspective.
Chair, could I add one more?
Sure.
The course itself, yes, we, the majority of the training did come from Taser, but the course itself was certified by California Post.
The training itself?
Yes.
Okay.
My question is about, are there any internal audits of use? Is there a plan for that?
Yes. So, as you know, we work very closely with the Independent Police Auditor's Office, and we do an evaluation of every single use of force, including those involving the taser. And the IPA's office also takes a look at every single use of force that we have. So yes, that is part of our process.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a good discussion. Other comments, questions? Thank you for your presentation. This is certainly gives us a much better feel for an understanding of the Taser 10 versus last time.
Yes.
I'll just leave it at that.
No, I got more.
So we appreciate you coming back
with
the information that we were looking for. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I just point out something, not necessarily a training question, but again, going to the policy 304,
Let me just, there's one phrase, because in my head, and I think I've mentioned this before, from a previous NACO conference, Axon was there selling, I'll say, the virtues of the TASER 10. And one of the things the Axon representative was very adamant about with this oversight crowd was saying, and we advise against using the TASER on fleeing subjects. Not just the concern about falling from a height, but in general, their statement was, still, if you're running away and you lose control of your muscles, you're likely to smash your head on the ground, right? That's where most of the cranial injuries that Axon reports, how they happen. And so in the policy 304, which seemed to be useful language, it says mere flight is not sufficient to use the device. So just kind of underscore that as I get the scenario you gave of somebody in front of you going to attack another person, you're trying to incapacitate the one, and it might mean you hit him in the back. That's a little different than somebody just fleeing from you down the street and using the weapon, because now you've got 45 feet to work with versus 22. I just leave it at that. But that I was concerned that, you know, to hear what Axon's concerns were about their own liability, and then I was looking for whether there was language in our policy that would seem to reinforce that. It seems to be there. I just would hope it's just re-emphasized in the training. That's my pitch.
Thank you for that. And I understand where you're coming from completely, but at the same time, I'm not ever going to put my officers in a situation where they endanger their safety or the safety of someone else because someone's fleeing and they're confused about whether or not they can use the TASER. The TASER is part of our use of force, right? It's a piece of equipment that we use to use force on someone. And so our officers have to follow our policies. They also are given the discretion in those moments, though, to make decisions to keep themselves safe and those around them safe. So I just wanted to highlight that part as well, that's where all the decisions start from, is from a matter of safety.
Fair enough. I mean, and indeed, that's referred to in the policy. So just, but I didn't want to lose the kind of the admonition about being careful about flight situations, because there's a reason for it, and it's safety. So, not just the safety of the officer, but of the person. Again, good conversation. Any other comments before we wrap this up? Do we have any public comment on this item?
Yes, Chair. We have received one public comment card from Douglas Olin.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate your heard. I hope your question is not prophetic. If anything, the increased range hopefully would increase the accuracy of use of the TASER, so that would be a good outcome. I understand, right, the use of the TASER is meant to protect officers, protect other citizens, even protect whoever the subject is, right, to avoid situations like suicide by cop. But mistakes have been made, and mistakes will be made in the future. Here in the East Bay, right, it wasn't that long ago that Johannes Messerli crossed Rod and mistakenly threw his service revolver instead of the TASER. He thought it was the TASER and shot Oscar Grant dead. Oscar was my student. We have had in our own town an officer rush into a store, try to grab a bat from the subject, and instead of trying other tactics, deployed the TASER, apparently ineffectively, and then within 40 seconds used their service revolver and killed Stephen Taylor. So, the idea is you want to use this conducted electrical weapon to cause neuromuscular incapacitation, but you can affect the heart and the brain. As a science teacher, I taught electronics. And I always taught my students what electricians know. You always work with one hand, you put the other hand behind your back, because you don't want a current going through your heart. And one of the problems presented by TASER is that you do, rarely, but you get these transcardiac discharges that go across the heart and cause ventricular arrhythmia and cardiac arrest. It can also affect brain function. So it's not the voltage, chewing on a thin mint, that's like tens of thousands of volts.
but only 27 amps. It's the current that kills you. To me, the training seems very thin. And what I didn't hear in your presentation, Officer Stanford, was much about de-escalation, right? Taser, to me, should be the second to last option, but what can we do to avoid even using the taser? Thank you.
Oh, the timer works. Driving me nuts. Okay. Okay. Any other public comment?
No, that's the only card we got.
Okay, thank you. In that case, before we move to the training topics for the board, this would be a chance to go back to the chief's report, if that's okay with folks. Chief?
Thank you. All right, good evening, everyone. Sorry for my tardiness. I was tied up in another meeting. I just want to give you a couple of quick updates. Since our last meeting, we had another recruit start the academy. He's slated to graduate in February 26th. We hired two full-time dispatchers and one per diem dispatcher, meaning that our dispatch center is fully staffed. Why is that significant? Because exactly 1 year ago, I think we were down to five dispatchers. We were using Alameda County Sheriff's Office to dispatch for us at night, and I'm so proud of the work that the team has put forward to get our dispatch center up and running and fully staffed. So,
how many folks is that?
We have 14 total. 14. So we're two overstrength hires. So not only are we fully staffed, but we were able to hire two over what we were providing for. So
thank you.
Welcome. In addition, we had a lateral police officer start this month. We also hired two additional police service technicians. Currently in the background process, we have two lateral police officers, five police recruit trainees, four of which have been given conditional job offers. And the next academy starts in late October, and we hope to send those four people through that academy. As I stated, one person is graduating from the academy in February, and then we have three graduating in December of this year. Of the applications that we received, we disqualified eight candidates for a police service technician, seven public safety dispatcher candidates, and 19 police officer candidates were disqualified. As far as announcements go, I would like to thank both Assistant Chief Torres and Captain Khan for the work that they've done in their respective bureaus. And Captain Khan, when he was over the services division, was part of the team that helped get us fully staffed and dispatched. But as of September 1st, they have switched divisions. So Assistant Chief Torres is now over services and Captain Khan is over operations. I also want to thank AC Torres for his work in the operations bureau as well. Also, I'm very excited to announce that as of September 1st, Detective Cole Preco was promoted to sergeant. Upcoming events, one of my favorites, Thursday, October 7th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the 7-Eleven on William Street will be our Slurpees with the Cops.
Yes.
I know, it's very exciting. Looking forward to that. Also, this last Saturday.
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
I'm sorry. Did I say
Thursday? Tuesday, yeah.
Oh.
October 7th is Thursday.
She says 7.
It's the second
of
Tuesday.
I'm speaking quickly.
Sorry.
Thursday, October the 2nd. Okay. From 2 to 5.
I didn't realize Slurpees were such a thing for board members, but no, I'll go with it.
The dates.
It's pretty exciting.
Hopefully it's not cold.
This last Saturday, we had our annual United for Safety event, and I wanted to sincerely thank CPRB for your support and your attendance in staffing a booth at our event. It was very well attended. We ran out of buns twice. That's a good problem to have. And I'll talk about the Ring cameras that were given away during the event in just a minute. So in August of this year, we launched a Ring camera program. And this is for residents and business owners who live or own businesses in San Leandro. They could apply for a free Ring camera. We were able to purchase 1,000 Ring cameras. And the purpose of the program is to enhance community safety, obviously to deter criminal activity, but also we hope that it will provide valuable leads when we have investigations. And so the cameras are given away, but there's no expectation that the owners share their data with us. We request that they share, but that's not a term of them getting a free camera. Participation is voluntary. And again, video footage is only accessed with either resident consent or through the proper legal channels if we need to get warrants, search warrants to access the information. At the United for Safety event this last Saturday, we were able to give out 130 Ring cameras, which is really exciting. And we still have about 500 cameras available. So if you go on our website, there are instructions there that you can apply to get a free camera. So I encourage people to please go on our website and apply, because this is a fantastic resource that we were able to offer the community. The reason why I asked Officer Stanford to stay behind is two reasons, and I'll go over the first one. So on Saturday, September 13th, the Alameda County Fire Department unfortunately was the victim of a theft. Someone decided to steal their John Deere Gator 4x4. Our officers responded, and through effective teamwork, they were able to recover the Gator, secure it, and return it directly back to the fire department's tower facility within a matter of hours. And of the team that responded to that call, it was Officer May, Officer Stanford, Officer Leonard, and Officer Schwitters. And I just wanted to give him kudos for that, because they were relentless in their investigation and were able to get back a very important piece of public safety equipment in a very short period of time.
There's a nice video on Instagram.
Yes, and we actually did post a video.
Wesley is driving
it. Driving it. Because, I mean, it wouldn't be the cops messing with the fire department if we didn't do that. So that was fun.
You can hear them saying, give me more props.
Yes, so good job, Officer Sheriff.
And no taser use.
Yeah.
And no taser use, no. No one got taser on that one. And then on a serious note, again, why I asked Officer Stanford to stay behind. Just today, he responded to a very serious domestic violence investigation with a possible child abduction element to the case. Officer Stanford found the suspect vehicle, was able to arrest the suspect, and then safely recovered the child who was unarmed. So, great work. Thank you so much for the work that you do for keeping our community safe. And that concludes my report. Thank you. I always forget something. Sorry. Lastly, okay. Officer Stanford has been selected to become a detective, so he will be moving to our Criminal Investigations Division very soon. So congratulations again on that as well. It's well deserved. Thank you. And then, I'm sorry, there is one more item that I would like for the City Attorney's Office to address.
Thank you, Chief Averett. Unfortunately, I didn't give this information to the Chief in time, but we wanted to report it. So this is in response to the request that was made at the last minute, or excuse me, the last meeting, regarding how the inquiry was as to how many lawsuits the city has faced in the last 6 to 8 years that involved claims of excessive force using taser. So we have done a review of that. Over the last 8 years, SLPD has been named in 6 civil lawsuits where the use of force was alleged to have involved a taser. So just to give a bit more context, 2 of these lawsuits directly pertain to the use of taser, meaning that was the primary method of force in these claims. In one of those cases, the matter was dismissed on the merits in favor of the city in a summary judgment motion. There was a determination by the court that the force was reasonable. The other lawsuit is actually related to the incident involving Stephen Taylor, so that civil action is currently stayed pending the criminal action. The remaining four cases do involve the use of taser. However, these are cases where the allegations involve use of force methods other than taser that were central to the claim, meaning taser was just kind of part of it in a broader context. And all four of those suits, there was expert analysis in favor of the city that the taser itself either was not effective or didn't make contact. But in any event, those matters were settled for various reasons within those litigations. And that's my summary for today.
Thank you. I appreciate, because I actually had forgotten we made that request. So thank you for going there. But I guess the question I've got is, I think that was part of the question was, what's the number of lawsuits that might involve tasers, but also how much has the city had to pay out, if anything, to settle those various lawsuits? Do you have a number? Or
I don't have a grand total. Again, of the four suits that have been resolved, again, those were not purely related to taser use. So I think it's difficult to kind of put a number value on that because, again, these involve claims where taser use wasn't central to the claim. In any event, I do know that some of those ranged in a range from $100,000 to settle upwards to, I believe, 1.2. I can get you the exact numbers if you'd like, but I don't have those in front of me.
1.2, I assume you're going to say a million?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know if others want more information this time. It's really your call as a board.
This is over what period of time?
This is over a period of 8 years.
This is the kind of thing we can revisit as we need to also, to get updates on what's happening in terms of the city's liability. But I appreciate that. Any other comments on that or questions?
This is if the chief is going to talk about the training that was held here. I don't know if we captured it last meeting. We weren't here, right?
I don't think I talked about it, so thank you for reminding me. It was in August when we were on break. We had a very phenomenal training, transformational policing model, where members of the San Leandro Police Department were in training classes with members of the community, including some of our board members here. The training was very well received within the organization, and from the community members that I was able to ask about it, it was also well received by the community. So moving forward, my hope is that we can have that kind of training again, because there was a lot of value in everyone hearing a different perspective, but also everyone coming to the table and kind of collaboratively learning, not only the history of policing, but also, where we look to the future to make sure that we don't repeat some of the mistakes in the past that were committed by police officers. But also, I think it was great to be able to spend some meaningful time with our community members, because a lot of times our interactions are brief, right? Either we see people on calls or maybe we may see you at a community event. But this was an 8 hour long training where there were some good discussions and conversations around the subject of policing and implicit bias.
Thank you. I think that it? Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Will any of that be like captured somehow on the website? Not like from a marketing perspective, but I just mean, like, if you weren't able to be a part of it and maybe the community is curious, what happened? Are there any quotes or images or anything? Is that going to be captured somehow?
I'm not positive, but I think we were supposed to do a social media post, and I don't know that we did. But I appreciate that question, and I can definitely put together a summary and put something on our website.
I haven't seen it, and I follow some of you, it'd be nice to see. Yeah.
Well, I think, I've thought about this in terms of others in CBRB business, but this is actually a really good example of something that deserves to be mentioned in the city manager's newsletter, and that gets widely circulated, so it's worth
Well, the city,
sure.
I
read the newsletter.
But sometimes the city also does
the
they do a Facebook thing too, where they mention
right.
the departments. Maybe it's a word to something for that.
Yes.
Just an aside, Saida, there were texts handed out, like half inch thick, that go into a log, and I can lend you one.
It's a, yeah,
like
sorry,
a
it's a, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's a book.
That
yeah.
sounds good, Sam. Thank you.
And I heard borrow, just so you know. Gotta keep us all on our toes. All right, so I think that's it on the, so the next topic and our next, well, let me take this out of order because I don't want to, we're okay with time so far, but the next item is that's an action item is just a really a pro forma thing. We went through this last year. There's a, at the NACOL National Annual Conference, there's a meeting, a business meeting of all the organizations that are part of the association. And so this body needs to actually authorize me, since I'll be at the conference, to represent us and be able to vote on our behalf in the business meeting. And like I said, we did it last year, it's pretty straightforward. If there's no questions, is there anybody willing to make a motion to authorize me to represent the CPRB at the National Conference Business Meeting?
I'd like to make that motion.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Keith. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All those opposed? No. Thank you. And so now we can get to the CPRB training.
Before we move too fast, just for the record, there was no public here to make public comment.
About?
On that last action item. Normally we would call for a public comment before we. I just want to note for the record.
Nope, thank you.
Yeah, the action you just took to nominate yourself.
Oh, or,
yeah.
That one?
Mm, yes.
Nominate myself?
Well, excuse me. Wrong language. To appoint you for the voting member. She's
got
just stating for the record that there were no members.
I appreciate that. Thank you. One of these times I'll get it totally right, but not yet.
But before we move on off of the training...
Yeah, no, training is, yeah, go ahead.
Well, just, I was just wondering if anybody that attended that training had any comments.
yeah, so I know I did. Sam, did you do it?
I
know you did.
Yeah.
The two of us did. Anybody else attend the transformational policing?
I did.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I guess three of us.
Three of us.
Four of us.
Four.
Oh, you and your two.
He was having the webinar.
Okay.
I just didn't give anybody else a chance to speak on it. I'll speak since I brought it up. And just being there half a day, I thought it was phenomenal. I think if there's an opportunity for all of us to see the training and see the direction that we hope is the national model of, you know, rethinking, reimagining how police in the community happens. That book is a really good book. I was lucky to get one, and then just kind of study it and look some of the things. When we initially did our training, it was a chief out of Minnesota, I believe, who talked about the same thing about just, you know, treating the community as people, and we're in every segment of society, we're going to have bad people, but it's how you treat them, and that's what makes policing a little bit different. So if there's an opportunity, comes back, you know, I'll do the whole day. But I think we all should be a part of our training period. So.
Since four of us, you know, have our book and we're able to attend, is there any chance you guys have any extra books that you might be able to share with those who didn't get a chance to attend?
Yes, I'll get you some books.
That'd be great.
They won't be signed, but I'll get them.
And you can keep this one.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'll say so I've expressed to the chief and everybody else that was involved that I really thought that was a cool idea for the training and kind of short because they had to squeeze a 3-day training to 8-hour pairs thing, 2 days. So hopefully in the future, there'll be the funding for us to actually do the whole, that 2 days course instead of just 1 day. I know it was also into consideration for the officer schedule and well, but yes, that was definitely a different, interesting experience. So.
Jim, did you want to add anything on the?
No.
Yeah, I don't. I was shocked here to say I don't have much to say, but it was terrific. I mean, the idea of getting the community members in the room together with officers in kind of what I'd call kind of a safe environment, it's a training environment, so it allowed for candor and banter both. And the trainers were impressive. They kind of managed the room really well, at least for the session I was at. I thought the officers were engaged, it certainly reinforced a lot of what we tend to call constitutional policing and the importance of that, and the role of leadership, which was a big part of their pitch about how critical that is as a factor in transforming the current police culture. So I thought it was excellent. And the materials are, I forgot about it, but yeah, they're terrific. Okay, move on to our last item before our wrap up on announcements and whatnot, is to go over the training. And Jess, I'm sorry you had to wait so long, but you're up. Everybody should have seen your list of topics for training. And it, again, it's attached to the agenda if you haven't. There are 13 items. I guess my initial question to you, Jeff, is you said that this list was developed in part with Casey coming on board as an impetus to do it. Are you when we agended this, part of what I thought we were trying to do was to kind of prioritize topics so that we could actually figure out what things can we actually build in as needed into our regular meetings, mm-hmm. So kind of as mini refresher pieces. Did you give any thought to that approach, or is this just what you're recommending as the totality of the training meta cover, if that makes sense?
Jeff, you're going to need to unmute yourself. I muted you because you were having some feedback issues.
I'm sorry. Are you hearing me now?
Yes.
Great. I think this training is valuable both for new members and for those members who haven't delved deeply into these particular areas. Just backing up for a second, we talk about AI and the use of AI by police departments. One of the primary uses of AI now and going forward in the future is going to be for training. And we decided, the IPA decided that we would try our hand at it. And what we did was we selected these 13 topics, 12 of which we utilized AI, a program called Notebook LM. To create both reference materials and a podcast. And that podcast is really created by feeding in the reference materials and outcomes, a two-person dialogue on the topic, which is really excellent and excellent for the way that some people learn. The topics were chosen because we thought that they were important for this group. We can certainly add to these topics as we go along and keep these topics as a library for both new members and folks who want to refresh in any of these. As I was listening to the talk from Officer Stanford on the tasers, we could easily produce a podcast with related materials on the Taser 10 as well, just as a for instance. I'm not sure that that's necessarily what we want to do, but that's the kind of thing that we can do. And just to back up a moment, it is part of the IPA's remit to develop and essentially provide this training to meet the mandatory training requirements and obviously, again, to provide for continuing education. So I'm happy to answer any questions for anybody who wants to use this. What we will do is put your name on the list and let you know that you are able to access it. And I understand that accessing it is not that difficult, but of course, if you have any questions, you can reach out.
Well, thank you. First, I guess I would encourage you to just use all 8 of our names. I think it's, you know, important that everybody have access to it, and they should. I don't want people to opt out, honestly. If it's good material, we ought to make sure everybody's encouraged to use it. That's my 2 cents on that. You mentioned the 12 of the...
Yeah, we can certainly do that.
Okay. And you mentioned that 12 of the 13 topics are in the form of these podcasts. Which one isn't?
The TED Talk from Chief Ramsey is not in the podcast. It is a TED Talk in and of itself. And I think it frames pretty much what we are all about and why we are all here. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Chief Ramsey, he was a deputy superintendent in Chicago, then moved to Washington, D.C. Police Department, which he headed for, I believe, 5 years, and then Philadelphia, which he headed for, I think, 8 or 9 years, and then chaired President Obama's 21st Century Policing Task Force. So he is an authority. I commend this podcast to everybody. And again, we will make sure that everybody's email address and instructions for accessing these classes are done.
Terrific. Thank you. Again, this is a little different than what I was anticipating this conversation would be, but it's certainly more holistic approach to show you here's all the topics that seem to make sense for us. I think I would encourage people to, when we get the access information from Jeff's office, to check it out. And maybe if we want to talk any further about what we'd like to actually make sure we all do together, whether it's in a meeting or whatever, as opposed to just individually picking off topics, we can still have that conversation. But let's see what's there first. Because I appreciate the work that that Jeff and company have done. I love the idea of podcasts. My son would love it. he seems to live in podcasts. So thank you for that. Is there anything else anyone wants to add before we...
There are just a couple of things I wanted to add to our report. First of all, and I apologize for not hitting them on time, the NACOL conference is coming up, and you may want to speak about that, but I will be there along with the chief and you, and we will be presenting on how we are operating as a cohesive group, the IPA, the police department, and the CPDRPA.
I think it's subtitled How to Manage the City Attorney's Office.
So that's number one, and number two.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to mention it, but I'm pleased that we're able to do this. I can tell you more in a second. We're running out of time. So anything else you wanted to add, Jeff? Was that it?
Just the last thing was that we are beginning our work on our annual report.
So that's a question I have for you. So normally, I have it down as kind of tentative for the October meeting to be receiving your report and reviewing it. Is that realistic, or should we schedule it for November, or what's
No, no, November, I think, is the right month because the period ends at the end of September, and then we write it in October.
Very good. That's what I'll do. All right. Then I think we've done what we can on that topic. Again, I appreciate the work you did and look forward to taking a look at that website. Let's see. We had... we have the next item on the agenda was to really talk about community outreach and the regional conference that was on August 27th and 28th, which three of us were able to go to, as well as Eric for one of the 2 days. I've had some, you'd be surprised to know, I have probably 20 pages of notes from those 2 days. And I actually would like to be able to share some of the, you know, kind of the highlights from that those sessions, but maybe carry that over to the next meeting. You know, maybe it's 10 minutes or something. You know, there was a whole day, for example, devoted to AI, and there was a lot of good information that came out of there that I hadn't heard before. And then there were some other relevant topics for us that were in the second day. So I'd like to carry that over, if that's okay with folks.
That's fine.
Do you want to say anything quickly about community outreach, other than, yes, we had great attendance at our at the United for Safety event?
I don't really have anything.
Okay, that's fine.
I do, I don't think maybe we can carry this, but we were talking about training. How about if someone was want to request additional trainings, I can talk to you about that later.
Not sure I know what you mean.
Some of us, I don't know, I'm interested in doing, remember back when we were doing those simulations with the algorithm.
Oh, you mean other kinds of training
besides
what's on the list?
Exactly right.
I think it's appropriate to bring up other ideas.
Okay.
And let's do that after people have had a chance to see what's on the
website.
Okay,
we can bring it up later.
Yeah, exactly. Let's carry that over. Because I had some other thoughts, too.
Okay.
Like, there's nothing in this material, this curriculum, for example, that addresses making sure people understand our ordinance, our administrative procedures, you know, some pretty fundamental things about how we operate, certainly for new persons. Really important to them. And we also know that there's a lot we continue to have to learn about the Brown Act and whatnot, so I don't know if that's something we should be planning for. But let's have that conversation.
That's fine.
Separately.
Okay.
So we'll carry over both the training and the, what did I just say? Oh, the report on the regional conference. All I'll say there is I thought it was terrific. Even Eric was impressed. There was probably 80 to 90 people at different points there. So it was, and the whole Bay Area was represented, as well as some agencies from as far away as, I think we had Rochester, New York was there and whatnot. So it was terrific. So I'm going to end it with that. So let me just go around if you have any comments or closing remarks.
Just glad that we're all back and looking forward to, you know, fall season, what that brings. That's all. Thanks.
Great. A Halloween fan. Okay.
I would just like to thank the family and your police department for my hot link. I waited patiently until the buns came in.
Okay, so you did get it. I want to make sure I got this right. So you did get a bun. Okay. Okay, Peter. I mean, you can enjoy the fun. The fun.
I don't even know.
Casey.
I think it's really great that the police department is giving like ring cameras to the community, and I'm really looking forward to like the training.
I just wanted to comment on the regional conference, and I thought it was great that the city could provide us this opportunity at the expense of the city. I enjoyed the conference, especially the second day, and it was very interesting seeing other organizations, other forms of the organization that we're in, because there's lots of variations on the thing.
Terrific. Jenny?
I don't have a lot to say. Just
other than thank you for that fun event. You guys know how to barbecue. Yes, and for giving us VIP status so we can skip the line and get our food and.
You're not supposed to tell anybody.
Well,
I
was record.
Wait a minute.
Okay, scratch that. Right.
Too much information. Go ahead.
Keith,
okay.
Oh, wait. This is his.
Was it, okay. Then I just got a couple things. I'll just say quickly to echo what Jeff brought up. You may recall that we, as way back in May, submitted a formal proposal. It was actually a lot of work that involved Eric, myself, the chief, and Jeff to put together a proposal for a panel discussion about, essentially about what are kind of the lessons learned from a small city like ours in creating oversight, and how has that evolved over the last 3 years? And essentially, NACOL decided that they had so many solid proposals from others, they did not schedule us to be part of the 4 days of the conference that are basically open to everybody. That's probably closer to 500-600 people. But the day before those 4 days start, which is a Sunday, they have what they call a board and commission forum. And it's just for board and commission members. It's not for staff, professional, you know, investigative staff or anything else. And so that's the audience. And they really recommended that we make the presentation there. And we readily agreed that we thought we still have a story to share. They were really thought that we were right in anticipating that there's an audience for, well, what happens in smaller cities? I mean, we're used to these mega oversight agencies, like Chicago and New York and LA, which is really, you know, it's, I won't say it's irrelevant to our experience, but it isn't our experience. And we really wanted to be able to share what you can make happen and be effective, you know, in a small city with limited resources. So that's the point of doing it. If there's a way for us to kind of share with you the PowerPoint presentation we still have to put together over the next month, we'll do that. So you'll at least have an idea of what we're covering. But hopefully you've got the gist of what we hope to be able to cover. So going to next meeting agenda. So the annual report from the IPA now will be November. The things that I had from our previous notes were to follow up on the CPRB training, so we'll do that, right? And then we'll also carry over the report on the regional conference. And there leaves, I know that the police department, like all of the city, is going through some kind of serious belt tightening news in terms of budget impacts. And I don't know, Chief, is that something that you could be able to share either in October or November, kind of how those budget cuts are affecting the department and how you're approaching it?
Yeah, I would say that would probably be closer to November, if not January. Because we are in the middle of another process. We just finished the budget, 2-year budget process, and we're making additional cuts.
Okay, so we'll check in with you next month and see if November is still realistic or not. But I think that's important for all of it. And frankly, it's part of our, the ordinance says we should have some input into the budget. This is what gives the chief a chance to share what she's up against in terms of where she's having to make cuts, and we get a chance to say what we think about that. So that's fine. So I've just got then CPRB training, regional conference report. Now the other item we had in kind of in the wings was to start to, and it came up certainly with the public comment from Douglas Spaulding, we had kind of said we want to start taking a look at the crowd control procedures, policies, you know, as that relates to especially the First Amendment assemblies. And that is the concern, of course, about what happens if ICE does show up in town and there are people demonstrating and whatnot. I'll just say that one of the topics that was at the regional conference was exactly this issue. the interface between ICE and local police and where the issues around that. So there's some of that I can share with, you know, as that agenda item next time, and I will. Do you want us to agenda the beginning to review the crowd control policy as an agenda item or for next meeting or not? And I think we should do it. The question is when.
If it would get on the agenda without us going over.
Over? anyway, so we could start that. We could put it on the agenda and then, you know, carry it over as we need to, right? So, but at least we'll get it in our queue for things that we're going to be looking at. Honestly, if we decided to do a deeper dive on it, you know, we need to create an ad hoc committee again. So, you know, we have a chance to get some volunteers to actually do that work for us. So I think I've got the marching orders here.
Just so we're clear on that last item, so it's crowd control policy, that's the title. I just want to make
I think
sure
it's actually clear. Called First Amendment Assemblies.
First Amendment Assemblies.
Where it primarily shows up.
Okay, so we're all clear on, okay, so make sure we're clear on what needs to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll just say that it's like use of force. There's not just one policy that covers all of it either. I mean, there are restrictions by law, for example, about how certain weapons can or can't be used for crowd control purposes at the state level. And I honestly can't remember if that's under First Amendment Assemblies or under some other place like use of force. So I won't, but I think we know what we're talking about. It is the First Amendment Assemblies as a start. To have a motion to adjourn?
I'll motion that.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor? Okay. Thank you.